Well, excited to get into the book of Exodus, or continue on in Exodus. And my title this morning is A Battle of the Gods. And if you like superhero movies or classic movies of kind of good versus evil, then you're really going to love these upcoming chapters in Exodus. And personally, I'm not really that into superhero movies. This will disappoint some of you, but I don't think I've even ever seen any of the Marvel movies or anything like that. But even without exposing our kids to any of that, it's just amazing how naturally they pick up on this battle between good and evil and good guys and bad guys. So like any good three-year-old, Amos turns everything into a weapon that is meant to destroy the bad guys that are existing all around him and fight these battles. And even Anya, or even Junia, our youngest, runs around in her little cape saying, "Superhero, superhero." So, I mean, it's just kind of naturally ingrained in them. Well, the book of Exodus, particularly these 10 chapters from 5 to 14, is really a battle of the gods in which only one can emerge victorious. God and Pharaoh, who was also considered a god, they're on a collision course. And we began to feel this power struggle and ensuing battle last week. In chapter 5, verse 10, the servants of Pharaoh, they go and tell the Israelites, "This is what Pharaoh says, go and make bricks without straw," and all that. And that's in direct contrast to the first verse of chapter 5, which begins, "This is what the Lord says, let my people go." And so you can feel the tension building, these two competing commands and voices. But as we're going to see today and in the coming weeks, this is not a fair fight. The battle between Pharaoh and the Lord is a mismatch of historic proportions, as battles against the Lord are. So in our text today, chapters 7 through 10, we're going to encounter the first 9 plagues. Of course, we can't get into detail of all the plagues, and we don't have time to read them all either this morning. We're going to focus in on a couple verses that are in your bulletin. But we can step back and kind of still see the big picture of the significance of the plagues and what it tells us about this battle between God and Pharaoh, and what it reveals about God's plans and purposes and promises in the world. So I want to divide up these plague narratives this morning by talking about the plagues, kind of an overview of their meaning, and then the plan behind the plagues, what is God doing through these plagues, and then the promises that these plagues are leading to, kind of the end results. So the battle lines have kind of been drawn, and the stage has been set, and we're about to go into these plagues. So let's take just a few moments and give a few words about these plagues before we then do a little bit of reflection and application about the plans and promises behind them. So the plagues are mainly about who controls creation and life. It's a battle between the gods, and God does some intentional acts to really show his superiority to the supposed gods the Egyptians worshipped, of which there were many, including Pharaoh himself, who was considered a god. And the plagues increase in intensity and destruction and scope, as well as in differentiation between the Israelites and the Egyptians, all leading to the 10th plague, which is by far the most important and dramatic, and which we'll spend the next 2 weeks on. And although there are some kind of discernible patterns in the plagues, there's actually lots of variability as you go through them. And I mean, the plagues kind of move from more harmless, even almost comical plagues, like the second plagues of the frogs, to the more serious and destructive plagues, like the 8th plague of the locusts that just devour all the land. Sometimes God hardens Pharaoh's heart, and then sometimes Pharaoh hardens his own heart. Sometimes Pharaoh summons Moses and Aaron, and sometimes they proactively go to him. Sometimes God works through Moses as intermediary, and sometimes the Lord directs the plague himself without any action from Moses. Is this on? Yeah? Okay. So the Lord's kind of just keeping everybody on his toes a little bit. And in case you're new to the Bible, hopefully you start to get this message, is that God's just really not that predictable. And of course, some of the most interesting content is the rhetoric and back and forth between Moses and Pharaoh. And there's this pattern of Pharaoh saying, you know, fine, I just can't take it anymore. Go and pray to your God for this to stop, and then I will let you go. But as soon as the Lord relents, he once again hardens his heart. And throughout the whole account, it's clear who's calling the shots. It's the Lord. It's Yahweh. And all these plagues declare the superiority of God. And in fact, some of the plagues are intentional kind of digs at the Egyptian gods. So for example, the first plague, the water turned into blood. The Nile was a deified life source. It was worshipped just as many rivers and waterways are still worshipped in many religions today in different parts of the world. And so God says, you know, to me, it's just water. Even since the beginning of time, Genesis 1, God says, I control water. Water belongs to me. And so he turns water into blood, and it's an ominous foreshadow of the 10th plague. And it's also an ironic punishment because it clearly connected to the fact that Pharaoh ordered these babies to be thrown into the Nile at the beginning of the story to die. So God is showing his power over the elements, which were often worshipped. The next four plagues, they all deal with animals. So we have frogs from the rivers. We have gnats from the dust of the earth. There are flies where there God begins to distinguish between the Egyptians and the Israelites, as he does also in the 5th, 7th, 9th, and of course, the 10th plagues. Then there's livestock disease, and then the plagues kind of start hitting people. So there's these skin boils, there's thunder and hail, there's locusts that devour the land, and there's darkness, and it's kind of a supernatural darkness, a darkness that can be felt, chapter 10, verse 21. And it's in these last few plagues, in 7 and 8, that God begins to reveal his plans behind why he's doing all of this, why it's taking so long. So this is what I want to focus on, that we move to the plan behind the plagues. So in chapter 9, verses 13 through 16, it's the plague of thunder and hail. And it says that the Lord said to Moses, get up early in the morning, confront Pharaoh and say to him, this is what the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, says, let my people go so that they may worship me. For this time I will send the full force of my plagues against you and against your officials and your people, so you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For by now I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth. And sometimes if you're reading, you're thinking like, why not? Like, why is God doing all of these plagues? Like, he's certainly powerful enough to just do one and that be enough. But God says, here's why I'm doing it. But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. And then in chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, before the 8th plague of the locusts, says, the Lord said to Moses, go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his officials, so that I may perform these signs of mine among them, that you may tell your children and grandchildren how I dealt harshly with the Egyptians and how I performed my signs among them, and that you may know that I am the Lord. So what I want us to get and to understand, to discern here, is similar to what I said last week as well. That God is more concerned with the big picture of his plans and purposes, the larger story that's unfolding, than in giving us what we want or what we think would be best in the present. For we are not God. And so last week I said how every indication was Moses and the Israelites were expecting immediate deliverance from Pharaoh. And so they walk in and they say, let my people go. And they're probably just expecting, based on what the Lord told them, for Pharaoh's heart just to melt like wax. But in fact, it turns out to be a bit of a labor, a process, and much harder than they were expecting. But if you follow the story, you see that God is setting up an even greater plan and greater deliverance than they were expecting. But they have to remain patient and trusting. Sometimes God allows the harder road to deliverance to be taken so that he can show his power and do something even greater. Let me say that again. Sometimes God allows the harder road to deliverance to be taken so that he can show his power, do something even greater. So for example here, at first the Israelites, if you read the text, they're just going to take a 3 days journey out into the wilderness to sacrifice to the Lord. It's partial, it's temporary. They don't even have this idea of full deliverance. Essentially, they just want to have a mini retreat, kind of like a mini revival in the wilderness, and then they're going to come back to their lives in Egypt. And Pharaoh is trying to kind of concede at first just to let them go, chapter 8, verse 28, not very far away, he says. You know, he kind of wants to like keep an eye on them. And then he says, well, just the men go, chapter 10, verse 11. And then, well, he says, well, leave your flocks here, chapter 10, verse 24, so that he knows they're at least coming back. He makes concessions, but with restrictions. But see, God is after full deliverance, a people fully set apart for him to worship him. He is after a people who are fully devoted, fully mature, fully alive, and he is willing to patiently work until he gets the best result for his people, even if it means temporary hardships, patience, and inconvenience. See, freedom is often a process, and only God knows best how to get us there. And we have to remain in a posture of faith and trust in him and his plans. And of course, we can just look at our story at our church here as an example. I mean, I remember when we came, and there were so many powerful words and prophecies and visions about this church given early on. And I think, you know, sometimes we, including myself, expected all of it to just start happening right away, that God was just going to kind of start a revival right away. But those of you who have been along for the journey know that's not how it happened. That those first couple years were really tough. They were painful at times. We were stepping out in faith and obedience, but then it felt like things maybe weren't unfolding the way we thought. And some started doubting and complaining, and then we even declined for a short season, which was scary because we were already really small. And we were way in the red financially, and it was scary. But looking back, God was doing a deeper work. He was building foundation, and I don't think actually it would have been good for us to start not only growing, but also experiencing some of the things that God is now doing in our midst. That God had to kind of move some pieces around, so to speak, begin to build the foundation and be patient. Because God is always more concerned with the long term than the short term. Which, of course, doesn't always sit well with very impatient human beings like myself. And I'm sure Moses and Aaron and the Israelites were getting exhausted like, another plague, Lord. Come on. I mean, after every plague, the hope kind of rises because Pharaoh says, all right, I'm going to do it. And then he hardens his heart again. But God says in chapter 9, verses 14 and 16 and 10, 1 and 2, that this is all so you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth, that I might show you my power and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. In other words, God's saying, I want you to know this is no fluke. Nobody can question that it was me that delivered you from the Israelites. And he says that you may tell your children and grandchildren how I perform signs among them so that you might know that I am the Lord. See, God is always looking forward. He's looking ahead. He knows this story is going to get told for generations, and he's willing to be patient so no one can ever doubt that it was him who did the work. And hopefully you can begin to apply that to situations in your life, the trials you're facing, the struggles you're in, the things you don't understand, that God is saying to you, hold on, I'm at work. Some of you are maybe familiar with or have been following the story of Kim and Clark Moran. Clark and Kim are PAOC, our network of churches, co-pastors for one of our churches in Abbotsford. And there's no way to tell the full story in detail here, but it's been told on CBC and CTV, on the front page of the Vancouver Sun, and well-documented on the Facebook group Bringing Home IO. And the Morans have been waiting. There's a photo of them with their legally adopted son, IO. And they've been waiting 2 years to bring home their legally adopted son from Africa. Back in December, they received a letter from the Canadian government from the immigration offices refusing to grant Ayo citizenship. And they've had legal custody of Ayo since August when they went to Africa to finalize the adoption, and yet have not been able to bring him home. So they've been basically living in Africa with their legally adopted son, waiting to be able to come home, all while being the co-pastors of a large church in Abbotsford. And if you know the story, when they first went over, they thought they would be back in a few weeks with their son. But when it looked like it would take longer, Clark came back home to be here so that he could work and do those things. But then Kim had a flare-up of her MS. She has MS. And so she had to come home to receive care here in Canada. And Clark had to go to Africa and switch places with her and be with Ayo. And then they were wrongfully accused of unethical adoption, claiming he was not from a Nigerian orphanage, even though they knew for a fact that he was. They had proof and all the paperwork and everything. And they waited months for updates from the Canadian government. And as of now, they're still in Africa with their son. And there's a massive social media campaign to get them home. And Kim says, you know, if Canada doesn't grant him citizenship, what happens? They send him back to Nigeria? To an orphanage? They take him from us even though he's legally our son? So can you imagine? Kim says, we are exhausted with the process and heartbroken at the results. But we are moving forward with hope that this isn't over yet. So 2 years ago, God put the dream in their hearts to adopt a child from an orphanage. And I mean, in a day of IVF and surrogacy and all the modern techniques used, while thousands of children are in desperate need of good homes, the Morans boldly and courageously stepped out in faith and followed the call of God to adopt and took the harder path of obedience. And when they first started the process and found Ayo and were able to legally adopt him, they might have been thinking, you know, praise God, God has made a way. And here they are 2 years later, experiencing incredible heartbreak and pain and challenges and even criticism. And I'm sure they've thought so many times, why, God? Why are you taking so long? But they have continually responded with hope and faith. And I believe that God is doing something even greater with their story than they can see. That ultimately he's working behind the scenes for his glory to show that there is no one like me in all the earth. To show his power for generations to come so that they might tell their children, including Ayo, and grandchildren how he performed his signs among them so that others may know that he is the Lord. Church, I can pretty much promise all of you, maybe not on the same scale, that all of us will face challenges like this. As we follow God's plan for our lives, both individually and corporately together, and a posture of faith is needed that says, your will be done, Lord. And we'll have times where we say, why is God taking so long to deliver? And I know we want quick answers and we want quick fixes and we want quick deliverances. We want one plague, not 10. But God is always more interested, first and foremost, with what brings him the most glory. And secondly, with our full maturity in him. For just like in Exodus, we find ourselves in the middle of a spiritual battle, a battle between good and evil. And we may wonder, why isn't God doing more? Why does it seem like the pharaohs of the world are getting their way? When will you deliver your people, Lord? And if you read the news or watch the news or you spend just 30 seconds on Facebook, you just join the most common cry of the Psalms. How long, O Lord, will you wait? But the Christian life calls for patient endurance. That word that was spoken at the very end this morning. Patient endurance and trusting in the slow and patient work of God. For the good news is, just like in Exodus, ultimately the battle being fought is a mismatch. And ultimately, God's promises will prevail. And so we'll close with point three, the promises of God. That there is no one like our God. His promise is that he will crush all of his enemies, those who think they are like gods. We know how the story ends, with the victorious one, Jesus, returning to make all things right, fulfilling all that he has promised and establishing his kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And like the Israelites in the meantime, we groan in our spirits. We long for that deliverance. We long to be fully in the promised land, and we will get there. But what these 10 plagues teach us is that we must hold on. We must be patient. We must wait and allow the work of God to unfold, and we must remain faithful. In the battle between good and evil depicted in Revelation, in both 13:10 and 14:12, it says this. It says, this battle we're in, it calls for patient endurance on the part of the people of God and remaining faithful to Jesus. We must continue to look to him, like Moses, to continually return to the Lord. And so in this Lent and soon Easter season, we remember that sometimes all we can see and feel is Friday. That we see Jesus on the cross and we wonder, what are you doing, Lord? What are you up to? Surely this cannot be the plan of God. And like the disciples, we feel all hope is lost and it looks like Pharaoh is winning. But as is often said, yes, it's Friday, but Sunday's coming. The promise of resurrection is coming. And I know that it feels like we live so much of our lives in this darkness and unknown and the in-between time of Saturday, wondering what in the world is God doing. But church, the message throughout the Bible over and over again is hold on, stay faithful, persevere. Sunday is coming. God will fulfill his word and his promises, just like Jesus fulfilled what he said he would do by rising on the third day. And because he did that, then we can trust everything else he said, including that he will come again to make all things right and that all will be well. But we have to faithfully endure, stay patient, hold on. So as the band comes to help us to respond, we really have two options. We can look around in the Oceanside communities of Parksville, Arrington, Coombs, Nanoose, and Qualicum and wonder, is God really in control? It seems like the other, quote, gods are winning. But church, there is no one like our God. And he is always at work, always moving pieces behind the scenes, always searching for ways to reveal his heart, always looking for a people who are fully set apart for him, placing their hope in him, patiently trusting. And he is coming again to establish himself as Lord of all, Lord of this whole earth, that greater things are still to come. So do not lose heart. Do not lose hope. We might wonder, Lord, how many more plagues can we endure? But God is choosing the path that reveals his full power, that leads to full deliverance and freedom, so that we might know that there is no one like our God. And so I want to close by just prophetically declaring that we would strengthen our faith in this good God by singing these words and letting the Holy Spirit just allow faith and hope to arise within our hearts. And maybe you're facing circumstances this morning wondering, how long, O Lord? How long will you allow this to continue? You might feel like the Morans wondering, how has this become our story? But don't lose hope. Your God is real. He knows just what he's doing. Place his yoke upon you. Find rest and trust for your souls. Because at the end of the day, don't you want to be on God's side? I said in the beginning of this series that if you had taken a survey at the time before the Exodus and said, you want to be with Pharaoh and the powerful Egyptian dynasty, or do you want to be with these enslaved people, this tiny group of people, which side do you want to be on? And all the average people would have picked, of course, well, I want to be with Pharaoh and the Egyptian dynasty. They're going to last, not this enslaved group of people. But God wins in the end. And so today you might be facing certain circumstances, and it's tempting to feel like maybe I should be on the other side. It seems like they're getting all the wins. Maybe I should just follow the ways of the world. Maybe I should just follow my own desires of my heart. I see others doing that, and it looks like it's working out for them. But friends, that's where we have to place our hope in knowing how the story ultimately ends. And knowing that God is with us, that God is for us. He is making all things right, and all will be well. So would you stand with me, and would we just declare this? That God is the God over this place. He is God over our land. He is God over our city. And one day everybody will know it. Every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And so we just want to declare it outside of these walls. We want to declare it over the Mid-Island region. We want to declare it down to Nanaimo and up to Comox and up to Campbell River, all the way to Port Hardy and down to Victoria and across BC, that God, there is no one like him. And he is ultimately going to win the battle. And so let's place our faith and our hope and our trust in him. Strengthen our resolve this morning. And then Lydia will close us with a benediction.